You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the final official Weekden update of the year. This is your weekly dose of everything Grizzlies presented by the Grizzden Podcast and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I've been joined every week, almost every week, by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It's going okay. It's going pretty good.
The Grizzlies are 27-51, 13th in the West, 24th in the NBA. They're 30th in offense, 13th on defense, 25th in net rating at a minus 6.7. They're 7th from the bottom. And that leads right in to my who's up, which is intrigue. The Jazz are on a 12-game losing streak, which has put them within two games of where the Grizzlies are in the tankathon rankings, which go bottom to top. And the reason that this is a who's up is because now all of a sudden these last four games matter. And some might argue, probably Kraft, that it is not for the better. We did not want these last four games to matter in this way. But just to put everything in perspective, let's look at who we have. With four games remaining, the Grizzlies are at home tonight. By the way, we're recording before the Spurs game. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, we do not know what happens. But home against the Spurs tonight. Tomorrow night, we're away against the Cavs, who are trying to win. Lakers at home, who are definitely trying to win. And then we have our final game is against the Nuggets on Sunday afternoon. And the Nuggets might be trying to win as well, depending on how this race for the number one seed goes with Minnesota and Oklahoma City. The Jazz are home tonight against the Nuggets. Then they're home against the Rockets, who are officially eliminated from the playoffs. Then they have at the Clippers, which is the second night of a back-to-back, and then away against the Warriors, who are obviously also trying to win. And so to me, when I look at this, I see a Spurs team who happens to be tied for the third from the bottom spot. And so they're probably trying to lose. And then you have a Rockets team who the Jazz are going to play in their second game who, might be losing a little bit of the motivation that they had a couple of weeks ago. And so, but the rest of the teams that were playing on both sides definitely want to win. And so to me, we will know within probably 2 to 3 days whether or not where the wind is blowing, let's just say, on this Jazz versus Grizzlies down the final stretch. The Jazz, though, are just, I mean, they're doing everything they can to tank. And I would venture to say the Grizzlies might be as well. If you look at the latest injury report, we'll see what happens tonight. That's all I'm going to say. If the Grizzlies win tonight, then it's going to be really crazy coming down the wire and seeing if the Jazz can truly catch us, which, I mean, like 14 days ago didn't think was possible. So that's my who's up, is just the intrigue of the final four games of the season. Kraft, what's your who's up?
I'll do kind of a tag team of who's up. I'll cheat a little bit. But, I mean, obviously, we talked about it last week, but I just want to kind of continue the positive vibes of who's up with Brandon Clark because he's looked great. And, like, I think last week it was like, oh, man, he really looks good. This is good news. Still looks a little rusty, and then since we've talked, he's actually looked like legitimately like good Brandon Clark. In spots, he's had a couple really good dunks, like in transition in a way. And you can still, I mean, I think you can tell the vertical's not quite where it was, but it feels more of a strength conditioning issue and less of an injury issue to me. And so I think that continues to be unbelievable news. I've been accused of somebody who has very high expectations and can be sometimes overly optimistic. And honestly, Clark's blown my optimism out of the water. He's been way better than I thought, looked way more like his old self. And so I just think that is a huge, you know, and especially while we probably won't get into it much this podcast, but as we begin to talk draft, lottery, off-season stuff coming up here in the next couple weeks on Grizzden, I think that's just a huge factor that I think we weren't expecting to count on. So that's really been good. And I have to say, secondly, I have to give a kind of a who's up because I really slammed him. Jordan Goodwin drove me crazy. I felt like, honestly, he was a two-way subtle tank earlier, that like we really only brought him onto the team not because he was good, but because we thought he would help us lose games and subtly. And he actually has really shown me his hustle, his rebounding. Feels like he kind of figured out the system a little bit better. So I just want to give a shout out to him. I mean, obviously, it's been a lot of garbage time, a lot of just random minutes, but I've been impressed, especially with his rebounding and just his hustle these last few weeks. So I wanted to give him kind of a little shout out on the who's up.
Jordan, what's your who's down?
My who's down, and this, you know, and we can get into this more on whether it's a big deal or not. But I haven't really been super down, but one little thing, it kind of irked me, and some people have complained about it a little bit, but one of my, I don't want to overreact to it. Maybe we can discuss it more later, but who's down is honestly our core group of guys not really sticking around for the Marc Gasol festivities Saturday night, like kind of making an appearance, but then sort of taking off early, kind of getting out of there. I don't think it warrants some kind of, you know, crazy hot takes or anything, but it was a little sad. Made my who's down, because I don't think there's really much else that makes me sad besides, you know, big picture season wise, but it just was kind of sad that really, you know, Santi and then maybe some of our two way guys that are still kind of like, you know, 10-day guys that are just kind of like taken in, were the only ones who kind of stuck around to the very end. And I just feel like, as we'll talk about, it was a lot of celebrating the franchise, celebrating why, honestly, we have a podcast. And why we love talking about the Grizzlies is so much as that core four and Marc Gasol. And so it was a little, just kind of, it kind of felt weird that they didn't stick around for the whole thing. So that's my who's down.
That's a good one. Who's down for me is specifically Desmond Bane's designation on the injury report. I haven't really paid very close attention because a lot of the things that they're listing are just, honestly, BS on the injury report, if I had to guess. Like, if this was a playoff game, three quarters of these guys,
lots of tendonitis.
I was going to say a lot of these guys would be totally fine to play. But Desmond Bane's listed as a lumbar disc bulge in the back. That's highly specific, number one. And number two, it worries me that his back issues are still persistent, even after only a short time playing. I think he played for, you know, a couple weeks, maybe three. And I just wanted to monitor that. You always see him, and you see a lot of players, to be fair, do this, but he always wraps up his back when he comes out of a game. I truly think ever since that Minnesota series, when he laid it all on the line, was obviously not right then for the next series against the Warriors, could barely move. I mean, since then, I've always noticed it. And it's one of those things where I'm sure with more conditioning and without a long layoff, like he had with his ankle injury, it would be probably different. And I'm sure the team is also, again, looking to try and tank as much as they can with the time they have left. But it's just the designation that was a little concerning to me. And I hope that we don't hear of anything further on that injury in particular. So it's already been enough on the injury front this year, and we don't need anything going into the offseason that prevents us from having all of our core ready for training camp.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of makes sense. He never looked right to me since coming back on the ankle, and I just thought maybe it was a little bit of just not being in good game shape, being out so long. But it is a little concerning because I do think he was a little bit, just didn't have quite the hop, didn't have quite the quickness that he did earlier in the season. So it is, I think it is something to monitor. I mean, that is a concern, not that we always feel like we have these things, but I think it is, I think that's a good who's down. I mean, it is something that, that has, it's like in the back of my mind concerning to me too.
Okay. Before we get to the main course, which is Marc Gasol's retirement ceremony, which you were in the house for, I was out of town. I had a couple of little appetizers for you. First thing, it seems as though we referenced it last week on the podcast, but it seems that positive steps continue to be made for the FedEx Forum renovation funding. The bill that officially reallocates the hotel motel tax to make up the difference in what was lacking in that funding has passed a few more of the barriers, and I think is on track to officially passing through the state legislature, which would take effect pretty immediately. They also announced that they're already going to get started on redoing the sound system this offseason, which we might have referenced last time. But Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian has been keeping everybody updated with all of it. And you've already seen some quotes coming out about how everybody's happy that they were able to come together. And so it's already kind of the self-congratulatory quotes that you're getting, which I don't think you would see if we still had some major blockage coming. So hopefully we get a resolution on that in the next month or two. Things in government, of course, move very slow. But I just wanted to mention that since we have been tracking it really closely since it started, I guess over a year ago, honestly.
Yeah. We're on that beat. Another thing, I think Vernon let it slip. I don't know if he was supposed to, but it sounds like their plan is to have kind of three summers of renovations, which is interesting, because obviously they don't have very much time. It's not like the Liberty Bowl where there's like a distinct football season and they can just shut it down for 7 months. And so it sounds like there's going to be 2 to 3 summers of kind of renovations. And this year is the sound, which is a minor one. But then going forward, that it's not going to be a shutdown, do a bunch of stuff. It's going to be sort of, like little improvements. I mean, or I guess 2 or 3 big improvements, which is interesting. I think we're now feeling like our big kind of next step is just hearing what the plan is, like what the renovations look like. Hopefully that might, once the funding is officially secured, which sounds like it's coming soon, hopefully we can hear that, because that's what I'm super interested
in. I think if I had to just forecast from all that I've read and reading between the lines, the 25-26 season is the first time we're going to really experience the bulk of what they're going to do, of course, barring any construction delays, which should be baked into our expectation anyway. So that's the season that I'm looking forward to. I'm very intrigued by what their mock-ups are going to be, because they have been very tight-lipped about anything there. And also, too, they all keep talking about how they're going to try and not just keep the renovations confined to FedEx Forum as the building, but the surrounding area. And that's one thing as a Memphian that I'm very excited about as well. Okay, moving to the second appetizer before the main course, I have a trivia question for you, Kraft. We have talked about awards and how the NBA has instituted the 65-game minimum to be eligible for almost all of the postseason awards. Things like all-rookie team don't require it, but pretty much the big ones do. And I wanted to ask you, how many Grizzlies at this point in the season are eligible to receive a postseason award? If they have, of course, earned it. Who's even eligible?
Yes. Jaren, I know, I think is at 67. I might stay at 67. Unfortunately for me as a season ticket holder, but probably big picture, fortunately, as like him just ending on the way he ended, not having to play another game. But man, I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Thinking through. I know Jaren. He might be the only one. I'm thinking about everybody else. No way it's Kennard. No way. No, I don't think it's Jake. Is he the only
one? Jaren is the only player on the roster eligible. Oh, there is only one other team who only has one player eligible, and that's the Toronto Raptors. The Thunder are leading in terms of eligible players with 10.
Not shocking.
Spurs are next with 9. that are eligible. So if you go down the list, I went through every team. Look,
that's pretty sad for how bad.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It doesn't necessarily follow what you would think in terms of the distribution. Yes. Spurs are the outlier. But other than that, I mean, if you look at the very, very bottom, you see Hornets, Blazers, Pistons, Raptors, Grizzlies. Okay, so like that's between 1 and 3. But the average for each team, of course, there's still 4 games to play, so you're going to see more trickle in for these teams. But the average is only 5.2 in terms of players eligible. And I think that's a number that's going to come up in some off-season meetings with the competition committee to check and see, maybe after the big media deal is signed, to say, okay, did this actually work? I have really only heard hate on this particular topic. But overall, I think it's just one of those things, too, where you got to look up and say, okay, the Thunder at 10, that's an outlier. But if your average is only 5, then, we got to look at, this is a pretty normal NBA season to me, besides the Pistons and the Grizzlies, who went had outlier seasons from injury. But you didn't have, besides Joel Embiid and Kat, and maybe I wouldn't put Julius Randle in the star category, but like you haven't had major injuries to your stars. So is this the right number for the threshold? And number two, is this a rule that would even need to be instituted for, let's say, the voters who are hopefully already factoring in games played to their voting? Are you artificially going to be taking out a group of guys that have actually earned it? Because 65 seems like a lot when you go through every roster and see the low number of players that are eligible on each team. So I thought that was an interesting exercise.
No. It is interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting, there's all sorts of different fun things we could talk about from that, but I'll be interested because I'm especially as a Grizzlies season ticket holder and trying to, sometimes actually bring friends to games or give tickets away. It really does stink when the best players aren't there. I mean, it makes a big difference. Even we're just seeing with women's college basketball, honestly, one player, Caitlin Clark, makes a massive difference. And there's all these stories about her, like people, like the Las Vegas Aces moving stadiums. And I'm, of course, I'm sitting in the back of my mind, like what happens if she turns an ankle and all these, and all of a sudden you have all these people have bought tickets to a game that she's not playing in. And that is a hard part of the sport. But at the same time, I know for us, I mean, or at least me sickos like me, I mean, part of what I love about the grind of the regular season is it really the 15-man roster does matter. And I've talked, not nonstop about how actually the NBA season, regular season matters greatly in that you've never had champions that aren't top three in the regular season in their conferences. And so being really good in the regular season really matters. At the same time, I think it's showing more and more you can't expect many teams to have guys play 75, 80 games in the season as well. And you have to have a deep team. And so it's kind of one of those hard deals. It's a real hard deal. I don't envy Adam Silver at all in thinking through all this. I like the 65 game and that I think he needed to kind of do something that seemed anti-player a little bit and pro-fan. But at the same time, it does seem like it might be an unrealistic expectation in some ways.
For sure. All right. Main course. Marc Gasol got his jersey retired. Which, the game itself was kind of funny. Like you were saying, we expected to have a lot of folks on the injury report on Friday night, but then Saturday have many more play. It was not the case. It was
the opposite.
Yes, a 20-point loss essentially to the Sixers. But what I liked about the ceremony, and then I'll let you go, Kraft, is that a lot of times they'll do these ceremonies at halftime, and to me that's just not enough time. And I like how we wait till the end. Of course, it is a late night, but it's also a weekend. And if you're retiring a jersey, that guy, whoever it is, has done enough to maybe have you wait around a little bit later than you would normally be out at a game. And so I thought that it was a good on the organization to do that for Mark and the city. And of course, we had the big reveal of the core four all being together. And with that, Kraft, I will let you have the floor.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, the game was disappointing. It's crazy because I basically went to the Friday night game solo because I didn't want to bring, I was like, I can't invite people to this game. It's going to be so bad. And I was going tomorrow with William the next day. And so but it ended up being a fun game because we played really well and the Pistons like are just such a sad franchise and we blew them out. Now we're having to worry about the Jazz. And so I fully expected, okay, this would be the last game that maybe we would get a Jaren and other people. But no, in fact, Jake LaRavia and Lamar Stevens didn't even play in the Saturday night game. So, I mean, it was the game. I just, to get it out of the way, it was bad. And it was frustrating. We had a 10-minute delay because the court came apart, which did lead to some more fun GG Instagram moments of him trying to fix the floor himself. But it was a long game that was not very fun at all. And, you know, it was hilarious that I always talk about my diehard people that make me even feel like I'm not a real Grizz fan, who are at every single game, totally locked in no matter what. I've never been to a game where they haven't been there. And they actually were like, when Timmy Allen checked in, they were like, who is that? like they actually had not seen that like 3 hours earlier, we had signed a guy. Just grabbed an available guy from the Memphis Hustle because he was not very good.
He's bad. He's from Texas.
He did not belong at
Summer League. In fact, I saw him last year play for the Grizzlies and it was not pretty.
Yeah. But I will say, and so it was a weird place where, unlike normal, the commercial time breaks, the TV time were actually what you look forward to in hopes that they would show some videos, show some some skits. We had some fun legends from the past. We had a great skit that I wish they'd put on Instagram of, because the two on cue, if you remember, the three ribs playing the two guys, the two on cue challenge. Well the ribs have not been great the last couple years, and they put their record on the board. They were not like they were in the core four era. There's this great 3-minute skit of Tony Allen and Z-Bo coaching up the ribs and through a Rocky type montage that might have been Michael Blevins' greatest work. It was awesome. That I wish they put it on. It was super fun. And then we had a lot of different people coming out. Interesting tidbits. These are like my notes here. I'm emptying the notebook on this. Interesting tidbits. Two of all kind of the people that weren't there, the crowd responses, two biggest cheers, Lionel Hollins and Dylan Brooks, in a slight upset for me. Sadly for me, who loved Dave Yeager and was very happy that we replaced Lionel Hollins with him, which I know is like might be a hot take for some. I know Lionel Hollins is probably way more, I mean, it showed, was way more popular. Yeager barely, like, golf clap might be kind, which was very surprising to me. No reaction to Yeager. Very interesting. And it was very interesting to me. Dylan Brooks, in fact, had probably the funniest video interview, talking about Mark calling him a fool and not Dylan the entire year. And it was really funny, but you couldn't even hear it because the crowd noise, it was so loud, the cheering for Dylan, that you could not hear what he said, which is, honestly, that kind of shocked me. It kind of surprised me a little bit, which transitions a little bit. It was a very different crowd for Saturday night, not the normal crowd at all. I think I'm not going to go as far to say like a Memphis Tiger type crowd, but it skewed older big time. Probably, I mean, obviously it was going to be a late night, fewer kids, a lot more boomers, a lot more people 50 to 70. I think a lot more people probably our age that were younger during the core four era. And so that was very interesting because it felt like a casual crowd, if that makes any sense, and not, which it's not, I'm not trying to call them, but it felt like a crowd that, it felt more like a crowd that loved the Grizzlies 10 years ago and have kind of checked out the last few years. I don't know how different it would have been if Ja had not got injured, if this season wasn't off the rails. But it did, it was a crowd that made me feel like this, the new generation, you know, the next gen has not captured the city. has not captured the casual fan in the same way that the core four had. It's just kind of the feeling of the crowd. It was super interesting to me because I think people are into the Grizzlies still, but there was just an interesting emotions to you realize how impactful, especially 2011 to probably 2013 was, how big of a deal that was to Memphis, to the crowd. And you felt that, like, you felt like there were people at that game, you know, Bongo Lady showed up and some other people, but you could tell that there was a crowd at that game that might've been their first Grizzlies game in 2 to 3 years where they were actually in the stands, which I found very interesting. And it just felt that way all night, which, you know, it was fascinating. So that's kind of the game, you know, the game kind of sucked, but it was just interesting seeing that dynamic. I was shocked by the lack of Jaeger like reaction.
I don't know. I will say Jaeger to me is just kind of like, oh, he's the guy after Lionel Hollins and before the train wreck of, what's it, Fizdale. And to me also, when you hire from within, that's why also I think like Bickerstaff, for example, is just never going to be remembered by anybody, because if you're the interim and then you get hired, it's just not the same. And I do hate that like Jaeger was in the building too and like had to witness the difference. But yeah, he was a great coach, like tactician. I feel like still got a lot out of the team that he was given. But that is really funny that he just got nuts.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, I'll speak, we're both Memphians. You leave Memphis, like, didn't get fired, felt it, didn't, you know, him and Para were weird. He wanted more money. He wanted a longer contract and he left. If you leave Memphis, Memphis people don't like.
That's very fair. So that's subtext. Another one.
But I was just shocked how noticeable, like the cheer Lionel Hollins on the video monitor got compared to like, the just golf clap at best that Jaeger got. That was a tough back to back, especially for Jaeger, who was in the building. Hopefully he was like back in the suite. And didn't
I think the
that.
To psychoanalyze really quick, the whole Dylan thing as well. I think there is this level of freedom that we have now that he's not our problem. So it's like you can appreciate the character of Dylan Brooks from afar way more than you can up close. And I think that's part of the, I mean, obviously Dylan too was just, I mean, you're only, I feel like that's the thing is like, we only now that he's gone are going to, I mean, we are going to remember the pain of last season and everything that went on. But also like you look back and you think of his hustle, you think of like, he was the identity in a way of a carryover to a little bit, like he and Jaren overlapped with Mark and that era. And just, I feel like his identity is that just grit and grind style, honestly. And so I think that's to me why it is unsurprising that he got such a big, I mean, the huge ovation was surprising, but like I would expect he would also get a ton of claps. So.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously, I mean, by far to me, and it's not even close, the best moment of the night was when they were setting up the stage, finishing setting up the stage, and they played, and I think you can find on Instagram, this Core 4 video that I think Project Pat narrates. And so they have that, they just put the video on Instagram, but they go from that, and then it immediately goes to a live video feed of the Core 4, right at the tunnel about to come in, and first time together in the building since 2017, and that was the best moment of the night by far, super emotional, honestly loudest I've heard the building all year. Not that they've had a lot to cheer about this year, but loudest I've heard the building all year, felt playoff atmosphere, honestly. And it was pretty awesome. And it was pretty awesome. You know, bringing each one of them out, you know, it was a surreal moment. Honestly, it was surreal with Conley because it's hard to remember that he's playing for right now. He's the starting point guard for a team that's trying to get the number one seed in the West. And you know, the other three guys seem so retired to me. So that was the moment. And that was like, okay, a 4-hour night at FedEx Forum, that moment right there, that was worth all of it to be there for that. And it was great. I thought the Powell interview was great. I thought it was good. I think Rob does a good job with that. I thought having the core four on stage was fun. You know, I think I texted y'all. I think sometimes Pete Pranica can, you know, be a little like,
oh, it's
corny or just really dry.
I'm sorry. It is further than that. Like, I love Pete so much because he is a constant voice.
Yes.
But when you put him in front of guys that, and when he thinks that he's being funny and just like, is just, yeah. I think he just plays the hits, but sometimes you need to not say the things that are very obvious. And it's almost like he searched right. for like the most popular hashtags and then was like reciting those from the era of Grit and Grind. And that was the only thing to me that I was like, all right, Pete, maybe just like you're laying it on a little too thick.
Yeah. Well, part of it is just, you know, play-by-play guys and sort of studio hosts, that is a different skill set. I mean, there are guys like Ernie Johnson, and maybe a few other guys with NFL and stuff that like can actually do both well. I think that is very, very few. And that's why I get it. Rob Fisher's different. Like a lot of people wouldn't recognize him as much, but I feel like
Agreed.
He gets like how to run
yes,
a panel.
100%.
And, you know, and honestly, younger, a little more. Like,
well, he does the actual interviews when they're walking off. It's not like right. he has a rapport yes. with those guys that Pete does not
right.
quite have. And it's not, I mean, it's a minor tweak. Obviously, we're there to see what those, like the actual guys themselves rather than Pete. And he does,
right.
to his credit, like he knows when to get out of the way, per se, and let them talk and move something along as an MC. But I do agree, like, the better replacement is sitting right there.
Yeah. Well, and just, you know, I mean, it's like, and also you have, honestly, Chris Vernon, Gary Parrish, Jessica Benson, all people who that is more their skill set is interviews, doing interviews, getting, especially with Vernon, getting the best out of those guys. And so I get why that's, they do what they do, but that is, having been through the Zeebo one and the Gasol one, that is the one I think they put on. I think they do it great. I loved what you said about doing it not at halftime, but at the end. That's the one criticism I just would say. I don't think that is where Pete Panica should be. I think they have a lot of other talent that would do a better job of like interviewing, doing a panel, that sort of thing. That would be more fun and less, like you said, cringe. But all that said, it's still some fun moments, them making fun of each other, you know, the fun stuff. It is also interesting. You can tell Tony's done more podcasts and done more media. He's way more comfortable.
Oh, he's so good. He to me saved the he spoke for the first time. I felt like it totally the interview with those four took on a whole new life. Like he almost inserted yes. a level of like we can all exhale and just hang out now because he's cracking jokes. Like he's got it. Like I now tune yes. in every yes. week when he's on with Vernon on yeah. Tuesdays where. I don't tune into every yeah. Vernon show because they talk. I mean, obviously,
right.
with the Grizzly season ending, it's going to be even less so. But like, man, Tony really is perfect for that.
Yeah. No, and he got them all laughing. I do think it's funny. Harrington pointed out. I do think it's funny that they all make fun of each other all the time, but nobody makes fun of Zeebo ever.
That's true.
So I just think, like, even then, still, like, they all have their funny things they say about each other, except for Zeebo. Nobody insults Zeebo. Which I think is really fun, but it's great. I mean, it is, and more than that, it just, you know, the whole evening. And I think Mark, you know, and I think similar in that sense, Mike is going to always be kind of quiet. I think Gasol was at his best when it was like remarks that he obviously had prepared or he knew was going to, you know, he was going to say himself. That was the best moments. He was great. But you know, to me, the magic of all of it was, you know, we didn't get to have the core four together like with Zeebo, but just realizing how big of a deal it was. I think I felt more of the emotions of that in the Gasol doc. So I kind of had those already. But thinking about, I love sports. I love all sorts of different kinds of sports. The rare, what we had was so rare and it was special. And I know they say, you know, SEC, that it just means more. And that's like a cliche and people make fun of it and don't in some ways, but really it is. I mean, when you look around the NBA, there is something special. It's why I think, you know, we're going to get the new lease signed. Why I never really worry of like the Grizzlies moving, because I think the NBA knows, I think the media knows, and I think we know that there's something special about Memphis and the Grizzlies. But just how, even with, I think, a terrible GM and a cheap owner, and we had this crazy thing that came together of these four different people and it worked. And for whatever reason, all four of them, we see ourselves like have something to do with Memphis, connected to the city in this special way. And you just see all that. And it's just, it makes me emotional. It gets me wanting to go back and rewatch so many playoff series on the NBA app. And it just, it was a great evening of celebrating Marc Gasol, who's my favorite Grizz of all time. But then it also just shows what I love about the NBA, which is that, I think Gasol said it well, that it wasn't necessarily moments, but it was a process with him. It was just day in, day out, watching that team, knowing you're going to get your fun TA moments, him making up for just missing layups by doing something amazing. But for me, with Gasol, it was just every day on the court, seeing somebody who did not have amazing athletic talent in kind of that normal way, but just him knowing when to get in and out of the lane to not get 3 seconds, defensive 3 seconds, how he just timed all his jumps right to block shots, to alter shots, how on the offensive end he was honestly like a precursor to Jokic in some ways. And like, honestly, if he, it's sad that he embraced the 3-point shot late. We embraced the him honestly starting the offense from the free throw line late. I mean, I think what I see from Murray and Jokic, I mean, I know they had to have watched some Conley Gasol tapes, Mike Malone, as he was developing all the stuff the Nuggets do. And so that was great too, but I can't say enough just about, we didn't win a title, but I think we had about as peak of a fan experience as you can have without a title, which is a team that represents you, that you connect with, having guys that never wanted to go anywhere else, that love the city. All four guys who've talked about, they're going to be involved with Memphis the rest of their lives. And obviously Mark being the biggest one, as someone who grew up here, some has been with the Grizzlies from the very beginning of the franchise, you know, first as a fan with his older brother and then obviously as a player. And it's just, so it was a wonderful evening, a wonderful celebration. And that's why it makes it, that's why my who's down is that I get a little nervous that our younger guys, who I think talent wise are going to surpass this group. But if I were them, I would want to stay and take it in. My only hope is that that's just, they're so annoyed. They're like tired of everybody caring about the past and they want that sort of thing now. And maybe that's a good thing, but that's why it was a little sad they didn't stay and kind of get that understanding. I do think because of Tony Allen, I think they'll care more about Tony Allen's next year because they're like, he's connected to the program. He's around. Gasol has not been around. And so that might've been one reason they checked out early, but I don't know.
I think a lot of them have just checked out of the season or are ready for October. So I think that's a big part of it as well.
Probably true.
But I agree. It is incredibly rare. I was trying to think of a comparison and I really can't come up with one right now where you have this simultaneously a team that is competitive and good enough to make a run. And yet if they didn't win a title, like things would still be, I would say, like potential actualized and fan satisfied in a way that this grit and grind team was. And I don't think that we see that anymore. There's a dividing line between teams that are title or bust or are completely tanking. And there's not, I mean, to me, maybe Sacramento could get to a spot because of the years and years and years of failures. And then last year actually breaking through, I think that the, maybe the Steph Curry 50-point game seven heartbreak is might have broken that, and there's no guarantee they make it out of the play-in this year. I mean, time will tell. But if they go on another run, I could sort of see, is Sacramento just really, really happy now to have a competitive team? And does that group kind of solidify them back in the mix? They're the only thing that comes close, and I don't think they're even near what the grit and grind era meant for Memphis. And so I echo everything you said. Very, very well said. The last note that I had was, I think having this camera angle where I watched it back on YouTube, and you could see just over Mike's shoulder, Rudy Gay in the background. You got to think, I mean, first of all, props to him for coming.
Yeah.
It would have been really easy not to. And I don't think anybody expected or would have wondered why he wasn't there. But you got to think, man, looking at Tony Allen up there instead of him, because people forget how he was hurt the first year, first run, second year, had the most brutal, I would say, playoff loss of that run. And he was very much a part of it and was on the court and was the first kind of Dylan Brooks, too many shots, too low efficiency type guy without the defense. And man, he's got to think back to his career as just a big what if, honestly. I mean, he had some longevity that some of those guys didn't have, and I think was a really high level scorer for a long time and played his own part in building up the team. Had some moments, but man, none of those moments were in the playoffs when it mattered. And I don't know. I just got that sense from him that he was just sitting there probably thinking back to, this should have been me. And if the chips had fallen a little bit differently, maybe it could have been. Or maybe not. Maybe Rudy was never actually going to be the guy. And I think that was proven out by when we traded for Tayshaun, who was just a low usage, clean everything up type of player. And we saw where that took us. So in 2013 to the Western Conference Finals. So overall, that was my only other takeaway besides what you laid out.
No, I mean, I think going, like, I know, remember, like, I think Jeff Calkins had this kind of, Tony had this picture, photo of a lot of the guys that came, of course, and like laughing because Tony wasn't in it, because Tony was like wandering around like he always does. But, you know, you have a Jarrell Arthur, which, you know, again, another, I mean, which is interesting because we're talking about Brandon Clark now. You know, Jarrell Arthur, you know, I think ruptured his Achilles, right? Or like had
yeah,
had
Jarrell
a major
Arthur, he's
injury.
He did get injured and was, but he still had a few moments in the playoffs. I still remember the alley-oop from Gravis Vasquez to him, and just like
I mean, but like that's another what if, like that there was just a lot, you know, Kyle Lowry, but there's a lot of what ifs as far as just, man, what if Jarrell Arthur hadn't got injured and he became like a major, like sixth man for us. Obviously, Grievous Vasquez, what if Lionel Hollins hadn't hated him so much? He wasn't there, but, you know, that just brings you up all that, all those kind of, you know, the Chandler Parsons signing, like just all this stuff where you look back and we were right on the cusp. And some people say our ceiling was never going to be NBA Finals title, but man, there's a lot of what ifs about GM moves, things we did. I mean, honestly, even the 2013 finals, we got swept, but two of the four games went to overtime, you know, and we forget about these things. There's just, you know, and so there is some of that stuff. But like I said, I take away one of the beauties of basketball is, and this is, you know, for thinking about this season, is we don't, you know, unlike I think a lot of the other sports where like football, where yes, you have QBs that stay for a long time. And you do have from time to time a team like the Patriots or the Chiefs that have a few characters that really stick around. But like really NFL, every fall is a clean slate. And all 32 teams think, or most of them, 26 of the 32 teams think, we can make, if things break right, we can get to the playoffs, we can make a run, we can win a Super Bowl. But really the NBA is a like multi-season television show in a sense that happens 82 times. And then hopefully, you know, 16 plus more times, and you, so you really, really grow to love the guys that stick with you for a really long time. And those four guys did it. And I think they did it in a way that was very Memphis. And like, I loved every minute of it. And I'm really excited that we're going to have two more of these, in the coming years.
Agreed. Good word. All right. Well, I'm about to head downtown for this, for this Spurs game to watch, you know, Timmy Allen and Jack White, who we just signed.
Hey, you do get Wimby show. You I get
was,
to watch
I've
Wimby,
been
though.
Refreshing the San Antonio injury report just to double check to make sure he was playing. So, yes. But all that said, last thing we'll do, like I mentioned earlier, Spurs at Cavs, home against Lakers, home against the Nuggets. My prediction is the home game against the Nuggets is going to be the lowest attended of the whole entire season because it's 2:30 on Masters Sunday. So I don't believe I will even be there, yes. But I'll have it on the second screen. but all that to say,
the question is, will we even play
exactly
GG in that game? I think I guess we have to.
Yes,
for eight.
That's right. Well, we'll do our final segment, MVP of the week, the final MVP of the week for the week. Yes. To an update. I'll let you go first.
Okay, not even close. Jaren Jackson, honestly, season MVP. Maybe that's giving away something for a later podcast with the other guys. Only got to play over 65 games for us. But honestly, complete game. We talk about it. I always talk about it. Rookie year, great 3-point shooter, clutch shooting. The next year, injured next year, amazing defense, defensive player of the year. And this year, defense gone down a little bit, shooting gone down a little bit, but playmaking, scoring, just basically being our best player, our number one option. The hope is in these next couple years, he's going to put all this together into one amazing year. And I think we got a feel for that in the Bucks game, especially of him. He scored, I know he had a 40-point game the night before and he was awesome, but really it was the Pistons and they suck, so whatever. But we played the Bucks, and I know they didn't have Dame Lillard, but they had Brooke Lopez and Giannis on the floor, and they could not stop Jaren. And Jaren was awesome, hit a fadeaway three to basically close the game out. And on the other side of the court, he was the number one person guarding Giannis for most of the game. I know we switched off him a little bit. Giannis had his lowest scoring game since November. And they wanted to win. They need to win. They're trying to get the 2 seed. And the fact that they were trying hard, they were playing, and Jaren was the best player on the court playing against guys who've won Defensive Player of the Year, playing against an MVP-type player. I just think that was great, and I'm glad. And honestly, I understand why he's probably not going to play another game after that, because you cannot top that. And that is a great game for him to go out on the season. So that's I probably took all of your talking points, but MVP Jaren.
Jaren's also mine, but for the sake of variety, I'll shout out Scottie Pippen Jr., who the last two games, okay, 16 points in 29 minutes, 24 points in 30 minutes in both of those contests, shot over 50% from the floor. And I think he's going to be the one to benefit from just nobody else really playing. He's normally a guy who tries to get a lot of others involved, and I think he's realized that he has to score for us to even have a chance. And it's been really fun to watch his development, because I do think that our obviously front court gets all the attention when we talk about how to build this team further, but back court does in fact need a little bit more depth, especially when you have some injury prone players who play back there to say the least.
So are you saying that Scottie Pippen might be a two-way next year that's really our backup point guard?
I am very much saying that, if it's not obvious. So shout out to Scottie Pippen Jr. I think he will be the MVP of the next few games and to close out the season. But Jaren, it's been amazing to see what he's done this year and his development. And I'm excited already to see if he can, in fact, put it all together, because if he does, watch out, everybody else.
Yeah, and I think he's shown that, like, while we might not want it day in, day out, and for maybe particular matchups, he can play the five. So
most important development of the season, arguably. Yeah. So, well, guys, thanks so much for sticking with us through a season that I'll just say it, for me at least, was tough to swallow, I would say, the last couple of months. And and yet you've been listening, you've been subscribing, and you've been sharing, and we always appreciate hearing from those of you that do follow us really closely. And we're looking forward to an off season where it's extremely important in a crowded West for the Grizzlies to build well, and we'll have our annual Denny Awards episode as one of the next few that we do. And then we'll head into the summer where we'll start to talk the draft. So Thanks for sticking with us. Like I said, this is the final Weekden update of the 23-24 season. For John, I'm Will. Thanks so much.